All right, guys, before we jump in, I want to tell you real quick about the 0 to 100 Elite Mastermind. This is our own high-level group for serious real estate investors looking to scale fast. Inside, we share deals, strategies, and we build real relationships all to grow our cash flow portfolios. And you know what? Most members actually add 10-plus units in their first year. Plus, you'll get exclusive access to our podcast guests for direct Q&A. If you're chasing time freedom through real estate, check it out at 0to100tribe.com. That's Z-E-R-O-T-O, the number 100, tribe.com. Now, enjoy the show.
There's always a transactional piece of real estate, but I think the relationship and finding out what a seller wants is a more important piece than the transaction itself. If you can agree on terms, the transactional piece of real estate is easy. That's the easy part of it.
Being on some chip, we go 0 to 100. Real quick.
Welcome to the 0 to 100 podcast. I'm Travis Dillard, and we are all about scaling a cash flow real estate portfolio from 0 to over 100 units and achieving your retirement number one, or R1. That's where passive income from real estate replaces your day job and gives you complete time freedom, which is the new currency of the rich.
I'm Mitchell Lehman, and I'm thrilled to have you on board. With our combined real estate holdings valued over $100 million, learn from us and others who've achieved time freedom through cash flow real estate.
This is Gabriel Hamill. Here at 0 to 100, you will not hear us talk about house flipping, spec homes, wholesaling, or land banking. We are only about achieving time freedom through buying and holding cash flow real estate. So remember, if R1 is the destination, real estate is the vehicle, and cash flow is the gas. Now go out there and buy some cash flow real estate.
What is up, guys? I am Mitchell England, and Gabriel Hamill is on the call today as well. Travis is off playing in La La Land, but welcome to the 0 to 100 podcast, where we talk about scale in real estate. We talk about getting your time back. We talk about time freedom so you can focus on the things that matter, like family, health, travel, supporting family, which we'll talk about on today's call a little bit, living your dream, whatever that looks like. Maybe that's traveling the world or building a nonprofit or whatever that is. I think we believe strongly that time is the first domino, and we choose cash flow real estate to get there. So 0 to 100, 100 is just a number. We know that if we can help you get to 100 units, we believe you can go well beyond if you want to, or you can stop there and say, hey, let's relax, let's slow down, let's live life and go do other things you want to do. So that's what our podcast is all about. Today it's Gabe and I. Like I said, Travis is off traveling to a fun spot. I think Turks and Caicos or something, but he's off playing, which is the name of the game. And so we're here today to talk about something we love, real estate. Can you believe it? Surprise, surprise, surprise. So yeah, I think, was it Turks and Caicos that I think he's like kiteboarding or something.
He's kiteboarding. Yeah. Last time I spoke to him, he was, about to go kiteboarding in Turks. We should talk about that a little bit because we obviously talk a lot about financial freedom and we talk about time freedom. We talk about buy and hold cash flow in real estate is our vehicle to be able to do a lot of cool stuff. I know I've got to travel to a lot of amazing places with amazing people, and with my family. I know you have too. Travis is off, you know, kiteboarding in Turks, but there's also, you know, there's a lot of other reasons. I mean, I know you're with family right now. I've had some times in my life where I got to be with my family, before family members have passed away. And so I think when we think of financial freedom, a lot of times we think about all the cool stuff we get to do, which that's, there's definitely a level of that, you know, but there's also the side of, you know, being able to be there with family. I know when my dad passed away, I felt very fortunate that I didn't have to choose between, do I go to work or do I spend time with my dad? Right. I got to spend every day for those last couple of weeks with my dad. And I didn't have to choose between going to a job or taking time off and not getting paid. And that for me was a new level of, appreciation for time freedom. Before that, it was all about spending time with my immediate family, being able to travel, being able to go do cool shit. And this was like another level of, appreciation. And same thing when my wife's stepdad passed away, she got to spend a lot of time there. You know, and I know you're with family now. And so it's both. You get to do a lot of amazing things, but you also get to be there for all the important things.
Well, it's crazy because I've never thought about, you know, like we've gone for years and years without anything happening to our family, and which is, we're so blessed for that, right? Like, and I think a lot of us do that. So I didn't think about cash flow real estate as being a vehicle to like support family. And it was always like, oh, to go adventure, to go travel, to go do what I want, to go, which is great. And we've done a lot of that. We've RV'd for 5 or 6 months out of a year, year after year. We've done a lot of, we spent a month in Spain last year, which we're so blessed to be able to do. But now, you know, my wife's family is going through some health challenges, and we were able to move from our house. And I think we packed the truck up and left in like 4 days, and we're going to go back, and we're going to probably Airbnb the house out just because it's sitting empty. But like the freedom to like not have to go to my boss or a boss and say, hey, can I take this time off and can I relocate? And can I, like, we just left. And so, so that's been a really, like, it's been an eye-opening experience, because here I am, we came out here, we got an apartment, we're setting up a life. The kids are going to a different school at this time, which is fine. They're strong, they're flexible, but like all of it goes back to the core. And like, if I wasn't doing what I'm doing, we couldn't do that. And so I think when you're thinking about cash flow real estate and your why, like, yeah, think about travel, think about freedom, but also think about like the people you love that could be across the country who might need you at certain times. So, I'm super thankful to be in this position. I know my family is too, that we can go support in this way.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. And I think it's something not talked about enough. Like I said, you know, I talk about time freedom a lot. We talk about time freedom a lot in 0 to 100. And there is an aspect of like, yes, you have the freedom to go do amazing, cool things, as you should, right? I think set big visions, do amazing things, live that life. But when it really comes down to it, it's about spending time with the people that are important to you and being able to be there for those people when they need you. So I love that you're able to do that. You said you picked up in what, 4 days, moved across country, and
4 days, you know, we got some tough news about a family member, and we just said, hey, like, let's basically, we were like, look, part of the way we navigate our lives is we picture like, and I do this, at least I picture like I'm 80 years old, right? I'm sitting on the back porch and I'm looking back and I go, hey, what would I really care about? And for me, it's like being there for the people who need us, especially mainly our family or our closest friends. And so we packed up the truck, put bins in the back. We just said, hey girls, let's hit the road. We don't know when we're coming back. Let's go support. And like, what a freedom though, to not worry about the finances, to not worry about like, is there going to be income coming in? Is there going to be, what do I need to do? Do I need to get a new job? Like, none of those things even crossed my mind. And so, I think that piece of time freedom, people don't realize they need it until they need it. And if you can put that as part of your why, part of why you're scaling in real estate, it's a strong piece. It's a strong, you know, it's a strong why to support the people you love. And if you're like me, you have people across the country. Like, I live in Washington, my wife's family's in Wisconsin, and I'm like going, okay, it's 2,000 miles or whatever that is. And without this freedom, we couldn't do this. So, anyway, it's an important piece for sure.
Prior to that, what are some cool trips you've gone on? What else have you done with this time freedom you have?
Oh my gosh, man. So a couple of years ago, we bought a motorhome. I think it was like a year 2000, good shape, right? But just a big hog, like 36 feet, a room in the back, like just, I think the engine was like half as big as it should have been. So we're just bogging up hills at 35 getting past. And I mean, but we took that motorhome across the US, and we actually spent, I think, 2 to 3 years, like 5 months out of the year in the RV, which was really a really good time with my girls and my wife. Headed down south to Palm Springs. We stayed in Sedona, went across Arizona, Nevada, and then also came out to Wisconsin and made that trip a couple times, including like Utah, Wyoming, went the southern route a couple times. So that was the last couple of years. One of the big adventures we were able to do was last summer. We picked up and we went to Spain for just short of a month, and went to 4 or 5 different locations. And just like, we'd never been to Europe as a family. And my 8 and 5 year old at the time were like blown away. Like, it was such a neat adventure. But to go there and like, really what's neat about investing in your world, I know, is the same as like, I shouldn't even call it work, because it's fun looking for deals and stuff. But if you want to call it work, like, you can work as much as you want or as little as you want. So like, for me, I went over there and it was like, I would, you know, wake up and check in with Travis, my business partner, do a couple of things here and there, but I was working, you know, quote unquote, working like 45 minutes a day. in Spain, you know, and it's funny because my wife at the time is going like, hey, aren't you, I thought you were going to be like working. And I'm like, no, I can, it's not, you know, I don't need to, you know, so for me, it's so fun because I enjoy deal hunting and talking to brokers and doing those things that you might call work, but like, I can also turn it off in a second and go experience what I want to experience. And so
you can do it on your own. You can do it on your own time. And it doesn't take up your whole day or your whole week or your whole life. You get to still
100%,
you know, live life by design, which is the whole purpose.
100%. So, yeah, but yeah. So what about you, Gabe? I mean, I know you've had some crazy adventures. In fact, I've caught wind of a couple, like, I think like Richard Branson might've been involved in one of them. And some different things that were pretty crazy. Like what have you,
gosh, the last several years we've gone on all sorts of our very first trip, taking the kids out of the country. We spent a month in Belize. A lot of amazing memories, you know, the kids driving the golf carts around. I mean, that was our first kind of big trip with the kids. My wife and I ended up going to Necker Island, with Richard Branson. That's his private island, with some other amazing couples. And since then we've rented different private islands each year since then. And then we bought an RV in, I think, 2020 as well. I had never RV'd camped. In fact, we had a trip to Thailand planned, and this is when the world kind of shut down, and I was so optimistic. I'm like, this is short lived. We're still going to Thailand, which we actually haven't, we have not rebooked that trip yet, but we had a trip to Thailand planned and they weren't letting any Americans travel into Thailand. And my wife's like, we should get an RV and go travel the country. And I was like, I don't know. Let's find a country that's open and go there. And she's like, no, do you hear me? I want to buy an RV. It's one of the most memorable trips. Right prior to that, we spent a month in Maui, and then we came home. We bought an RV. We never RV camped. We jumped in that thing and with really no plan, and traveled for 2.5 months, me and my wife and our two kids and our one dog at the time. And we just kind of made it up as we went. We stayed anywhere from, you know, nice RV resorts to boondocking it in the middle of the desert with nobody around, to staying on the side of the road, to just
so
anything,
awesome.
Anything you can imagine. And it was an awesome adventure. And then we also have some other trips, you know, coming up, you know, and, you know, it's the time freedom. It's the buy and hold cash flowing real estate that has allowed that to be possible. And then, you know, as I said on the, you know, kind of the top of the show is, you know, I also had that extra appreciation, you know, 6 years ago when my dad passed away, and a couple of years ago when my wife's stepdad passed away. It's like, that was a new level of appreciation for time freedom. But again, it was the cash flowing real estate that allowed me to have that time to go do awesome things, and has also allowed me to have time to really spend with the people I care about. And those things are important. So
I love that. Yeah. I think also, like, you know, designing like your life how you want to, you know, I mean, I know we've had some side conversations where it's like, you know, Gabe and I probably share some similar personality characteristics where we question everything. Like, I mean, everything, any organization I've ever walked into, any school, any, anything I've joined, any church, anything, I'm always questioning everything. And I also question just the way people live. And so, like, I had time freedom when I had a couple grand a month in passive, and I know you did too. So, like, I don't think this needs to mean that you have several thousand, 10,000, 20,000 coming in a month. I think time freedom can happen for you at various levels of your life, and you can design it how you want. I mean, there's been years where I have a couple grand, but I'm like, look, we're gonna choose things that are super fun and lower cost, but I'm not gonna go get a job. I'm gonna keep deal hunting and build up my passive. But I'm still free. I still have time. I still have, which like, I don't need a Ferrari sitting in the garage to be happy. Like, but I do need time. So like, I want to stress that, like, you don't need 20,000-30,000 a month. Like, this could happen at very various levels. I know you in the beginning of your career had like, what, $1,500 or something, and you left your job and you're like, look, I'm free. Right. Like,
yeah, I worked a 30-hour week minimum wage job, and, you know, and so Yeah. I stopped working and was financially free, you know, $1,500 a month cash flow positive. But I think it also goes to show, especially for these younger and newer and want to be investors, like it's actually easier to replace your income 100%. When your income is low. Not saying that you can't when you have high income, but you know, I have, you know, doctors and attorneys reach out all the time and they're like, hey, I'm making $300,000 a year or I'm making $800,000 a year. I want to replace my income. Is it doable? Absolutely. But they've already got that lifestyle creep. They're already used to living off that income. Well, they're probably used to living off half of it because sure. They're being taxed on about half of it, which is we could do a whole show on some of the tax advantages of real estate investing. But my point is, when you're young and you're getting started, it's choosing the difference between making money and building 100%. Wealth. If you can really understand the difference of making money and building wealth, you can actually retire young and retire wealthy, you know, pretty quick if you hold that vision in your mind and you focus on those things and you do those activities that actually get you closer. And I very much agree. You can be financially free and have that time freedom way before you're way extremely before.
It's
wealthy.
It's not even the same way topic. Before I mean, there's some parallels, but really, like, you can be time free way before you have wealth or you're considered rich or whatever that definition is. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because you can gain time freedom kind of two ways. Like I know one guy who sold everything he owned and gave everything away and completely lived off the land in Hawaii, right? Complete pure time freedom. Now, he didn't live a lavish life, but it was a life that he wanted. I know very, very few people. In fact, he's the only person that I have personally known that was willing to give up every, you know, worldly item essentially and go live off the land for trade. That's one level of time freedom. And the guy has an amazing story. He actually passed away several years back drinking some bad water, you know, up in the mountains. But, you know, for everybody else, I think financial freedom is the path to time freedom. Right. And so it's like, do you want to go live off grid? Like very respectful if you want to take that on, or do you want to build enough wealth that you can also have enough financial freedom to have that time freedom and build the life that you want? I think a lot of it comes back to what is that vision for your life? What is it that you want and create that. And a lot of time that's going to take you being really clear on what you want. And then moving towards those things. If you're not clear on what you want, it's really easy to fall into that status quo of like, hey, I'm just going to get a job and I'm going to keep working and I'm going to, you know, work for someone else. And I don't really know what I want, but you know, the how to do it, that comes later. But I would, you know, for anybody that wants that level of financial freedom, time freedom, that wants to live life on their terms, just get clear on what you want your life to look like. Because I really think it is then easy to go, okay, does this activity align with that thing that I want? Or does it not align? If it doesn't align, say no. If it aligns, say yes. And that's going to move you closer and closer to the life that you want.
I love that. You got to have a filter though. And you got to think for yourself, like stop letting, you know, like we have this sort of societal expectation. You go to school, you go to college, you get a job, you buy a, you know, you work 30 years, you retire, you buy a condo in Florida, you play pickleball and then you move back home next to people that can take care of you or whatever. And I'm kind of joking, but it's kind of true. There's kind of this track, right? Like this acceptable track. And I'm like, you got to question that. Like, it reminds me, I was back, I was at a buddy's house in Los Angeles and he was walking me through his house, this gorgeous house, right? In this neighborhood, beautiful, beautiful property. And he walked me through his garage. He had like this beautiful sports car and a motorcycle. And we were kind of walking through and I'm like, oh, when's the last time you took this car out? And he's like, oh, I it's been couple months, you know, or since I bought it or whatever. Right. And it, same with his motorcycle. Oh, when do you ride the motorcycle? It's like a brand new Harley. Well, it's, I don't know. I haven't ridden it in a long time. I don't have the time to. And we kept walking through the house but he kept telling me about his title at work and all this stuff. And I was like, how long do you sit in traffic each day? Well, 2 hours on the way there, 2 hours on the way back. Well, oh, how are you and your wife doing? Well, our relationship isn't great. Like he had all the material things around him to show success, but every single thing he said about his relationships, about his time to experience the things that he had, everything was negative other than he was propping himself up with a title. And I finally asked him, like, are you happy? And he's like, no, no, I'm not happy. And so I think, look, there's nothing wrong with that. If he said, look, I love my job. My wife and I are doing great. I love where I live. I love these things. I love my W-2. I have no problem with that. There are people that love their W-2. They love their life and they're doing awesome and more power to them. But the worst thing is if you're in that position because you feel like that's where you need to be or have to be and you hate it and you can't stand it. And so like for those people, and if you're listening to this and you feel like that, for me, I'm like, question it, question everything, question where you live, question what you do, question how much you spend each month, what you spend your time on, question it all, and really think about like, what would life look like? Say, what if you did sell the house and the motorcycles and the car and you quit the job? I mean, I did it. I quit everything and I sold everything to start this adventure. And it's the best thing I ever did. And that was a good personality fit for me because I was that miserable guy. I was working the job and I'm going, this is not what I thought it was.
So which I think that's where it comes back to that clear vision. Like once that vision's clear, then you can really ask yourself like, how much time am I spending doing something that is completely far away from the life that I want? Cause if you're not moving yourself closer to the things that you want, then you must be moving yourself closer to the things in your life that you don't want.
Totally. Totally. And you have to question it. And I think you've got to push past this, like these societal expectations. You've got to push past like the track. Like for me, I'm always asking how I can be different and what I can do to take my life in a different path, because I think the herd, unfortunately, I think the herd is miserable. I think most people get into, you know, they, like for me, I got the degrees, I got all the stuff, and I even got the jobs that I wanted, right? But I didn't get the life I wanted. And so today, even with my kids, I don't ask them what they want to be when they grow up, because I don't want them to say, hey, I want to be this or that, and then just take the life that they get. I ask them what life they want to be, and I encourage them to think about what they can build behind that to support that. And I think we ask our kids all the time, what do you want to be? What do you want to be? But we don't ask our kids what life they want. And that's, those are two different questions.
I love that question. It actually makes me think of, I think it was John Lennon that famously told the story of his teacher asked him, what do you want to be when you grow up? And he said, happy. And she said, I don't think you understand the assignment. And he said, I don't think you understand life.
That's beautiful, man. I love that.
Now, whether or not that's a true story or not, you know, I've heard that many times and I think about that often, because we're when we ask, hey, what do you want to be? A lot of times we're, you know, I think the brain goes right to like a job, especially for a kid. Hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? Right. Like, but what do you really want to be? Like, I don't know, happy, free. I mean, there's a lot of other answers outside of this singular job item, right?
Yeah, 100%. And I think my kids are starting to get it. You know, my oldest was reading the book, our book that we're just coming out with. And she's like, man, why isn't this taught in school? I think this is so needed, you know? So she's already sort of getting it. But I think if we ask our younger generation those questions, we'd have more people that are actually chasing freedom and actually chasing self-expression, and then building systems and processes and cash flow real estate or whatever that is behind a business, behind their lives, so they can go achieve these things that are so important. Like we started the call with, supporting family or travel or adventures or whatever that is. So yeah, I mean, I think it's an important conversation, and one that we, you know, this all comes down to your why. And I think my why has always been time, and that time has allowed me, and I know you're the same, to do things, to travel places, to support family, to have adventures that, that like serve as assets in my mind. I mean, my trip to Spain, man, is an asset that'll never stop paying me. Like the memories with my little girls, jumping off the rocks, like, you know, so yeah, it's an important conversation.
Yeah, I love it. And I mean, I actually think what's interesting is I do feel like there's a generation that's waking up to, you know, look, I'm not saying nobody should go to college, right? It serves a purpose for some, but I also think a lot of people have come out of college also realizing and seeing that like, hey, this doesn't equate to the job or the success or, you know, the paycheck that I thought it would. And so a lot of students are still coming out of school, hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, and they don't have a job that supports it, right? So now they have a job that they don't like. They're spending most of their time and day doing that, and a lot of times it's just to barely get by or just to pay off those student loans. And so it's, I think, you know, it's, I love when I hear, you know, people say like, hey, I want to do something different. I want to learn. Like we have the ability to have the information at our fingertips. Now, you might not get a fancy piece of paper that says you have a degree, right? Or a couple, right, you know, letters behind your name, but the information's out there. And those that want to seek financial freedom, that want to seek time freedom, they want to do it through real estate or entrepreneurship or business. Like that information is there. And I actually don't think you know, I would argue that college possibly financially is maybe the worst return on your investment from a number standpoint. And, you know, if you want to pursue knowledge and information, a lot of it's out there. It's out there, for free. You know, there's mentorship, there's masterminds. I mean, the information is there. It's taking the information and the right information and then taking action on those things again to achieve the life that you want.
I agree. I spent a lot of time and money on college, and I think it gave me something different than what I thought. Like for me, I thought that you get out of college and you're set, right? You get into the real world, you get an amazing job and you go pay off your college really quickly. What I didn't realize is that you're taxed at a pretty high rate. It's pretty hard to catch up. It's pretty hard to pay off those loans. And from a time and money standpoint, for me, like, you know, I was a business guy. And so I was studying business, which it gave me some things that I think are important. I learned how to learn there, and I learned I made a lot of good connections, I guess you should say. So, but like, if I look back and I go, hey, if I would have taken that money and that time and gone in a different direction and just spent, you know, one 20th of it on Amazon books, I probably could have gotten a lot more. And so, but it depends. I mean, I also have friends who are doctors and they want to be doctors. And so the education system, there's a track for that, obviously. So, but I mean, the fear is like, you know, you have this generation that goes to college, they're $100,000 in debt and they get out and they're really not marketable in the workforce. And they're working at Starbucks serving coffees, which nothing wrong with that, but that's a challenge when you have $100,000 in debt. And so, and that happens a lot. So like you said, what's the return on your investment? I think that's why you're also seeing a lot of alternative education and, like you said, masterminds and things pop up because there's a need in the marketplace. People are not getting the same return you even got 10 or 20 years ago going to these institutions, you know? And so, yeah, it's a challenge.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So yeah, we're advocates for financial freedom, time freedom, live life by design. Let's shift gears a little bit. You know, real estate specifically, curious to what you're working on. You know, you and I have both been buying real estate for quite some time. What are you working on now? How has your investment philosophy changed, if it has? You know, I know you're a big mobile home park investor. What kind of deals are you looking at? Are you making offers on? Are you buying? Are you selling? What are you doing?
Yeah, so we're net holders. We have sold a couple in the last couple of years, just if we feel like we need to prune the tree, you know. But really, we're net holders. Like, our philosophy is buy and hold forever, force appreciate, make them better, make the tenants' lives better, make them worth more, and refinance, and ideally hold forever so we can keep the cash flow in place, the tax advantages, keep paying down the debt. So holistically, net holders. We also like the mobile home park space because we feel like it's always going to be a need. In good times, unfortunately, people, you know, get left behind. They need affordable housing. And in bad times, the line grows even longer. And so, I think there's a big need for mobile home parks or mobile home, living and affordable living in our country. Unfortunately, our government continues to print capital. And so, so life is getting more expensive, not less expensive. So we like the mobile home park space. I like the land lease model. It's simple. They're simple to operate. And we, you know, admittedly, we haven't bought a deal in the last probably year or so. We took some time to really dial in our operations at Cadia, our investment company, made some key hires, and we just kind of got back into acquisition mode. We're actually in contract on a 50 unit right now. Awesome little park. That we connected direct to seller. And so that's kind of where my head is right now, working on that project, doing some due diligence there. And then this year we're looking, you know, ideally we'd like to do between 10 and 20 million in takedowns in the MHP space. I think right now, we're just seeing more opportunity when they adjusted rates so quickly. There's always deals in the market, so I'll never say that, but it did tighten things up. There's a little bit of what I would call a standoff between buyers and sellers, but I think that the tree's been shook so long that deals are starting to come to fruition. We're able to go make good deals. So yeah, that's what we're working on.
I was going to ask you just that. I mean, I'm seeing that as well. It seems like are holding on to, they want top dollar and thinking they're going to get 10 offers competing and, you know, overbid for their properties, and buyers are wanting, you know, 2008 style discounts, and they're just not there. So yeah, calling it a standoff, I think you're exactly right. I think some of that is going to shake out, and there's going to be a little bit more, you know, realistic both on the buyer and seller side, and deals are going to happen. But it's an interesting time, and we've never had rates ever in the history of, you know, mortgages jump up that high that fast. You know, but prices have not, in most markets, have not come down that wildly yet, right? And so I think buyers want these huge discounts, and sellers are holding tight. I'm seeing some flexibility on sellers. I'm seeing a lot more, you know, assumable loans. I'm seeing more seller financing opportunities. The word motivated seller is starting to pop back up. You know, nobody was a motivated seller a while back, and they were still selling, you know, selling things at top dollar. So it's an interesting time for sure. But I think in the real estate world, it's always an interesting time.
It is. And I think we go back to, and I know I've said it before, I know you've said it too, like deals aren't found, they're made, you know? And so what I do find, is in any market, when I really put my head down, I start to source deals and make the right phone calls and start to really kind of get into the acquisition mode, we always find deals, like any market. And interest rates can be high, they can be low, they can be, you know, so I, even though we took a little bit of a break, that was more of an operational break for us to really dial things in. I think deals can be found in any market. You know, and like, I know you've taken a lot of deals down with hard money, which is, that's a high interest rate, but you know what, if you have good debt cover and you've got good value, then then it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. If the financing supports the deal, it makes sense. I mean, it doesn't matter if interest rate, you know, is 1% or 15%. If the deal supports it, right? It's a math. It's usually a math game. And there is deals in every market. And you know, one thing I see, especially newer investors will say, I'm sitting on the sideline. I'm waiting until rates come down. I'm waiting until prices come down. But the reality is, if you're not in it, if you're not trusting the process, if you're not looking at deals, if you're not making offers, if you're not learning how to read a profit and loss statement, you're not going to be, if you're not active in that part of the game, in that part of the process, you're not going to pull the trigger. I don't know anyone that sits on the sidelines waiting for prices to come down, interest rates come down, that actually pull the trigger when interest rates come down or prices come down. So like you got to be in it. I mean, you got to be analyzing deals. You have to be looking at deals, building relationships, making offers, because when those deals come your way, you're not going to be ready if you're not in it. And you can be, I like to call it actively patient. So, you know, there is a period of time, 2020 was the first year since 2008 that I didn't buy a property, but I was trusting the process. I was making offers, building relationships, looking at deals. December 31st of 2020, the last day of the year, I had 4 mobile home parks in contract because I trusted the process. I was actively patient. I ended up closing two out of four of those deals, you know, early in the next year. But it was trusting the process. It was not sitting on the sidelines. It was being actively patient. And I did a lot of that in, you know, 2008 too. 2008 is when I was, you know, on Craigslist every night and, you know, calling sellers directly, all the for sale by owners, making offers, looking at deals. And then it was a year later, 2009. A lot of people won't wait a year. A lot of people won't trust the process for a year. They get tired of looking, they get tired of making deals, they get tired of analyzing, you know, analyzing the deals and making offers that keep getting rejected or laughed at. But if you trust that process and stay with it, a year later, all of a sudden you start having that deal flow. So I think it's so important, like trust the fucking process. Even in a time that you may not be ready to buy a deal yet, or you know, you think maybe it's not the best time to buy, because those opportunities are there and they will show up. And when they show up, you need to be ready to actually buy the deal.
100%. Yeah. And I think we're trained to, like, you know, you think about, like, when you talk to anybody coming out of college or school or whatever into the workforce, we're trained to go sell our time. We sell it via the hour or we sell it via salary. But either way, we sell our time. We have an expectation when we put in this much work, we're going to get paid this much. In this game, it doesn't work like that. In fact, you go a long time without getting paid. But the process, like Gabe's talking about, you trust the process, it will happen for you. And it happens in such an impactful way that one deal can literally change your life. I mean, I had a deal a couple of years ago that, like, gave me a return that was twice what I had saved in 15 years. And this was when we first really started to scale, I think maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And I was like, oh my gosh, this, And like, it took some work to get this deal. It took some negotiations, some creativity. I wasn't paid anything going into the deal. We were really creative on the front end. We actually sold that deal. One of the very few deals we sold it. And I'm like going, oh my gosh, this is more cash. And by the way, more cash flow during the deal than I had received in like, you know, 15 years. So like, trusting the process is a big deal. And also like Robert Kiyosaki talks about it, working for free. And I say working, I don't consider, you know, looking for deals really work. It's not that hard, but if you want to call it that, like working for free and not sell and refusing to sell your time, you're just playing a different game, you know, and you're able to have huge, huge impact when you're patient.
Yeah. And getting around people that support that, right? I mean, all those years you're not getting paid. There's no return on the hours that you're putting in, right? Or the deals you're not getting paid. But then, like you said, in a day you got paid more than 15 years worth of salary, right?
Yeah, it was huge. I mean, I'm like, this is incredible. But it does take patience. We have people, you know, in the elite mastermind that we've talked to about this, who just get started. They're like, hey, I'm not finding something. I'm like, and we're working with them. And then, you know, you see it all the time. 6 months later, they go, oh my gosh, like this is working. Hey, I got a call back about that LOI. Hey, I just tied something up. Oh my gosh, this deal's got $500,000 in upside. And you're going, okay, like this is what you need to, you got to like finding deals, or I should say making deals is sort of a behavior more than like a one-time transactional. Hey, I sent out some letters and it didn't work. It's a behavior. It's a weekly sort of practice or art, I guess you could say.
Oh, I agree. And the elite members, it'll be fun to get them on, you know, a year from now and have, or maybe before, and have them start sharing their story, because a lot of the stories, a lot of the elite members, it's the same thing where it's like, they're excited, right? They're excited. And then there's like a frustration of like, gosh, I've been making deals. I've been making offers. I'm not getting anything accepted, but it's like, trust the process, because for one, a lot of people won't even start. They want to do it, but they won't start. And then a lot of people get frustrated and they quit. So those that stay with it will find some level of success, and how much success will really depend on how big their vision is and how far they want to take it. But oftentimes people don't even start, or they quit before they get that first deal. I've shared this story before. I had a friend that was super excited, read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, started listening to all these podcasts, and was like, I'm going to invest in real estate, was so pumped up, you know. 6 months in, still pretty pumped up. 9 months in, pretty frustrated. Like, man, I've been looking at deals, making offers, nothing makes sense. I don't know. Maybe this isn't right for me. I'm like, trust the fucking process. And I'm telling myself the same thing, because this was 2020, the 1 year that I didn't buy properties. I'm like, trust the process. Trust me. Right. Well, at that year mark, bought a property. A couple months later, bought another property. A couple months later, bought a third property. But what if he would have stopped at 9 months? What if he would have stopped when it got hard? You know, I mean, now he has, you know, $2 million worth of real estate, and it's life changing, possibly generational, you know, financial change in that family from that one decision of, hey, I'm going to start investing in real estate, and I'm going to trust the process, and I'm not going to quit.
100%. You got to trust the process. And if you haven't taken down deals and you're just getting started, I understand why you feel frustrated, because you haven't been through it. Now I have sort of this trust or this knowing that deals do come when you're practicing, or you're weekly, you're putting it out there, you're talking with broker, you're doing your thing. Like, I know deals will come now, but like in the beginning, I do get it. I understand, because I was there too. I went for a year or so where I'm like going, I was asking the same questions. Is this for me? Is this, am I different? Am I not? But there's this weird, like theoretical, or I don't know if that's the right word, but there's this weird wall you have to break through. And I know you went through it, Gabe, where it's like, you're looking on Craigslist for a full year, you find a deal, but then like, when does the next deal come? Like within a month or two, right? Like really soon.
It was real quick. It was a snowball effect, because like you said, those hours, and a lot of times it was, you know, after I came home from that minimum wage job, after the kids were in bed, right? It wasn't even a ton of time, but it was like, it was the compound effect of doing it on the regular, right? Sometimes it was like an hour, if that, you know, it's like just looking, but I did it consistently. And those hours snowballed into where after that first deal, then there was another, and there was another, and there was another. And it really is that compounding effect. Or, you know, you can do that with anything in life. I mean, our results are the result of, you know, where we spend our time and energy. And you know, whether we it's just like the compounding effect of working out versus not working out, looking at deals versus not looking at deals. The result is going to be the result of the effort and time and energy that you put into something.
Totally. And I want to mention the pillars of the tribe. And we teach this a lot in Elite, and like part of the where to focus, we talk about education, mindset, deals, deal analysis, capital, and operations as like the five pillars. And I mentioned this because like, I can tell you right now, if you're working on these weekly and you're focusing on these and you're honestly getting educated, you're reading the books, you're reading our book, you're reading the books we recommend, you're working on your mindset. That includes like getting around the right people, like associating with the right people, associating with people that are thinking bigger than you are, that are you know, just around the corner from where you want to go on that path. Deal analysis, like how do you know when you see a good deal? I mean, most people, I can send a good deal to their inbox and they're like, oh, no, pass. And it could be $1 million upside because they don't know how to analyze. They don't understand the numbers. They don't understand rent roll or profit loss or cash and cash or DSCR. They don't understand the language of real estate. So I think it's really important to focus on that. Capital could be capital raising. It could be, hey, where am I going to get the capital? How am I going to negotiate the deal so I don't go in with much capital? It could be connecting with lenders, but like in the end, you got to figure out where that's going to come from. And last is operations. That's dialing your operations, your checklists, making your business efficient. But I talk about these five pillars because that's part of our process. And we have what's called the flywheel inside 0 to 100, where we're like, look, the flywheel is based on the compound effect. You start working on these in week one, I guarantee very little is going to happen. Week two, you start to get some understanding. Week three, week four, 6 months later, you're going, oh my God, I'm around the right people. I'm speaking the language. I've read the right books. I've listened to the right podcasts. I understand how to find deals. I've got capital lined up or I understand how to negotiate with very little down. Like, and by, you know, 6 months, 7 months, you're going, how did I just take down a 20 or 30 or 50 unit apartment complex or mobile home park? And it starts to compound. The flywheel starts to spin very fast to where it takes very little effort to keep it spinning, just like, you know, the momentum of it. So anyway, I want to mention these pillars because it's like, man, you start working on these 6 months later, you're going, holy smokes, I am moving so quickly and my brain's shifting. We have two girls in Elite right now that just, I think they're in contract on a 12, I think it's 12 plex. I can't remember the size. But just even a year ago or 6 months ago, they're going like, you know, there's no way we can do this. So anyway, it's fun watching it happen.
That's honestly one of the most rewarding things for me is watching people get excited about real estate, but then actually taking action. That first deal, I mean, like the nerves and just the excitement, you know, I mean, I love that. I love, like, I'll get messages on Instagram about, hey, I just did my first seller finance deal. Just did my first house hack. I mean, I'm cheering for everybody to win. And it's just the most rewarding thing to see someone go from like excitement to action to actually, you know, actually taking down a deal. You mentioned, you know, good deals, you know, you could send to someone's inbox. I put a deal that I'm working on in your inbox last week. Yeah. I know you had a chance to look at it. I know, you know, you and Travis are focused in the mobile home park space. I like that space too. I have, 9 parks, 8 mobile home parks, 1 RV, RV park campground, but I've been really focused, more in the commercial space. My last several purchases, as you know, have been large triple net industrial deals, but this deal is pretty interesting. It's a just under 60,000 square foot medical complex with 10 tenants. The numbers look phenomenal. Anyway, I put that in your inbox. So that's something I'm working on right now, among some other things. But I'm pretty excited about that. I like the commercial space a lot right now. I think there's opportunity there. I think there's opportunity in every single asset class. I know people kicking ass in every single asset class. I like the mobile home park space. I like the commercial space. I have multifamily. You know, you find your niche and you go for it.
Totally. And I love so I got a chance to look at that deal and like, I'm a cash flow guy and I know you are too. Love the cash flow on this deal. It's super interesting. In an area I actually know the area pretty well, pretty strong area, good fundamentals. And what's interesting to me about this, and I love to dig around more, is like, medical complexes have a need to stay. In other words, they're sticky because they've done some heavy tenant improvement, usually, you know, built out rooms, built out common areas specifically for that purpose. And so like, this is a, this is an interesting thing. And where I'm in my career, you know, or journey, I guess you'd say, is like, we're focused on MHP, but like, I'm always kind of, there's 10% of me that's looking outside of that and going, hey, what other opportunities are there that I can go learn about, go partner with somebody like Gabe or somebody else that really has been down that path that knows it better than I do. And so like this deal, man, yeah, it's at the top of my box right now. I'm going, we gotta connect and talk more. Cause I love what you've done with the triple net side.
Yeah. Those numbers look good. It's also a broker, that brought me my last deal, which was a industrial deal in Iowa City, phenomenal deal. And we talk a lot about relationships. I've talked about my Iowa City deal quite a few times, mostly in the elite call, ridiculous deal, but it really came down to, I had a great relationship with the broker had a great relationship with the lender. And, I found this deal through the same broker, but what I did, I said, hey, why don't we reach out to the lender and see, what locations and what asset classes this lender would like to lend on? Because I really like the creativity and the flexibility that this lender had, and they like that area. They like this asset class. And so that's what makes it a great deal. It's not just the property. The property has, it's an amazing deal, with the financials fundamentally. But it's also a good broker relationship, a good lending relationship. And I think that goes really far in real estate investing. It's building genuine relationships, and brokers and lenders are part of those relationships.
I love that you said this, because it's like, when people think of a good deal, like if you ask somebody who's sort of just getting started, like, what's a good deal? And they're like, well, you buy low, you sell high, there might be something like that, but like a deal, there's so many pieces to a deal. And like, you mentioned the lender, like the lending piece that it can make a deal or break a deal. Really? I mean, you could technically go in for overvalue with amazing terms and still get a really strong cash flow, cash on cash, debt service coverage ratio. So this is where I think a deal is really multifaceted. There's so many variables that make a good deal, and it's hard to you can't simplify it down to like, well, you buy it for less than it's worth, because you can also get yourself in some trouble with that mentality. And so, as cash flow investors, we're looking for good, strong cash flow, good debt cover, good cash on cash, which means our money is working really hard inside that asset. We want strong assets in strong areas that are sustainable over time. We're not going to experience vacancies that hurt us and can hurt the bottom line. Like, there's a lot of variables there. And then you mentioned relationships, which I know you're big on, and I am too. I think it's one of the most important pieces of this game. You've got to focus on relationships, and it doesn't take I don't think you need to have hundreds of relationships across the country, but a few of the right ones, a few of the people that you can really take care of and take care of you. I mean, it can make all the difference. Like your lender, for example, out there, like what a great relationship to go back to him and say, hey, let's go do another deal together. Let's be creative on this thing. So we all sort of high five in the end. There's just a lot of pieces to a deal versus just a low price.
Yeah. And I think it's amazing with all the real estate podcasts out there and platforms and groups. I'm amazed how little financing gets talked about, like how you finance a property. One of the most important, if not the most important things, like that's what like makes the deal work or not work. That's what makes the property typically cash flow or not. Unless you're paying all cash for a property, then it almost doesn't matter if it's a good deal or not, because it's going to be all cash flow. But then again, you don't get the benefit of the interest write-off and some of the other things. But if you're buying a property with a loan, like those financing terms, that makes or breaks a deal. And so I would take great terms over a great price any day. I'd rather take a fair price with amazing terms than a good price with, shitty terms or average terms.
Totally. I mean, you can run a hypothetical and say, what if you go pay, let's say you pay $1 million for a property that's $500,000. Most people would say that's crazy, but like, what are the terms? What if it's no payments for 10 years?
What if you amortize it over 100 years?
Sure. And I mean, we're being extreme to prove a point, but like really, some of the deals I've heard you talk about, I'm going, whoa, like those terms are so insane that like it provides for that cash flow. I mean, I would pay anybody twice the value of the property if I didn't have to pay payments for 10 years or as 100-year amortization or what. I mean, again, using the extremes to prove a point, but like it's real,
those are extreme examples, right? Like I have a real life example where I was buying the mobile home park and I had a local, one of the local banks say, hey, we'll do it, but we want 40% down and it's a 20-year amortization. And I'm doing the math and I'm like, they're willing to finance it with 40% down and 20-year AM, and it doesn't cash flow at that. Now I have a hard money lender that would go 10% down interest only, and the interest rate wasn't that much different, but it would cash flow at those rates. Like why would I put 40% down on a 20-year AM and then be a negative cash flow when I could put 10% down, even though the interest rate is higher, it's interest only. So my payment was significantly lower because it was interest only and not amortized over 20 years. It just made financial sense. It was a better cash on cash return because I was bringing less money to the table. It was an absolute no brainer. The price, whoever I, you know, got the lending from, the price of the property was exactly the same, but one set of terms were better than the other set of terms. No brainer.
Totally. And I, you know, it was interesting because the other day, I think it was on our Elite call. You were talking about seller financing, and it's the same with lenders, but especially with sellers.
I was talking about seller financing.
Yeah. Can you believe it? I mean, Gabe, it's like, it was the first time you've ever talked about it, by the way.
I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah.
It was only that time in about 100 other podcasts, I think.
Yeah. So,
but other than that, you've never mentioned it.
Never, never.
But it was interesting because you said one of the questions you get a lot is, what are the standard terms, something like this? What are the standard terms for seller financing? And I love your answer because you go, well, there are no standard terms. And like, I love that because you got to think way outside the box. The terms between a seller and a buyer can be whatever you want them to be. And that I love that answer. So, I mean, maybe talk about that with your career, or I hate saying career. It sounds like a W-2. With your journey in real estate, like, talk about that with, you know, how you've been super creative to create awesome, awesome deals.
Yeah, that is the one of two questions that I get asked the most. The two questions I get asked the most is, how do I talk or convince a seller into carrying financing? And my answer is I don't. I find sellers that, not that you couldn't, but I find sellers that already want to carry financing. They already know what seller financing is. And I just ask the question of, hey, what kind of terms would you be interested in? And then they tell me what they want, right? They tell me by that simple question, hey, what kind of terms would you be interested in? It usually comes out, it's price, it's down payment, it's interest rate, it's some other emotional aspect of the deal. And then as far as the terms themselves, yes, the other question I get asked the most, probably the most, is what are typical seller financing terms? And I mean, you nailed it. Yeah. My answer is always, there are no typical seller finance terms because every seller wants something different. And so if you ask a seller what kind of term, if you know they want to carry finance and you ask them what kind of terms would you be interested in, they're going to tell you something. It's very rare. Every once in a while, they're like, throw me an offer. I don't know. Throw me an offer. But usually by asking that question, they tell you what's important to them. Then it comes down to how creative are you as a buyer and how creative is the seller willing to get? Are you able to give them the thing that's most important to them and still make the deal work for you? So I've done anything from direct principal payments where every dollar is paying down the principal of the loan. I've done interest only payments where nothing's being paid towards the principal, but my payment's lower than if I were to amortize it out over 30 years. So I'm essentially cash flowing more. I've done, as you know, many no money down deals and a lot of low money down deals. You know, interest rates vary from below market interest rate to above market interest rate. I've deferred payments for, 6 months on one deal where I had no payments for 6 months. I mean, you can ask for literally anything, and whatever you as the buyer and the seller can come up with, you can put on paper, and those are the terms. And so the more creative you're willing to get, and the more creative a seller's willing to get, you can make an okay deal turn into a phenomenal, strong cash flowing real estate deal.
I couldn't agree more. And I think, like, you know, one of the things you're really good at, and we've really practiced on the way to scale, is like understanding their needs as well. And I know you mentioned that, where it's like, yeah, I have needs for cash on cash and DSCR. I've got some on the financial side, but also like understanding needs. And we've actually started with mobile home parks. Like, I'll ask sellers right away when I'm negotiating, like, hey, what are your needs? Like, hey, I know this is uncomfortable for your manager. Like, what if we bonus your manager to stay on? Like, and we took care of him. Or, hey, is there a certain home that you'd like us to remodel first? Or like this last park, I asked her, hey, you know, like, do you have a lot of kids in the park? Because we'd love to add a playground or an area where families can barbecue. And like, for me, I'm like, our goal is always to make properties better, to make tenants' lives better, but also during the transaction, in the beginning, I can also ask questions and show that I'm going to come their way on certain things outside of the purchase and sales contract. And so like understanding, and it goes, you could go on forever about this, right? Like, hey, do you need an annuity stream? Do you need a certain amount per month for the seller payment? I mean, you could ask a ton of questions, but like when you in an offer or a person in sales or another thing we call is a collaboration where you're coming together on this, basically this contract, make sure you understand their needs, because the more you understand theirs, the more they're going to meet yours. And it's a give and take versus, hey, give me. Right. And so, anyway, I think it's a back and forth.
Yeah. And I don't think you can stress that point enough. I mean, you said like, find out what their needs are. A mistake I see with a lot of new investors, and it's easy to do because you're looking at deals through the lens of like, how do I make this deal work for me? But if the more you can learn about a seller, and that's why I think if you can have FaceTime with a seller, the first mobile home park that I bought, it was like a pocket listing. It was a broker and they brought it to other people. So there were other offers out there. They said they sold it to me because they liked me. I showed up at the property. I walked around with them. I took the time to hear their story. They had a higher offer. They just felt like I would take care of the property. They'd owned it for 30 something years. They were very emotionally attached to, you know, the tenants. They were actually on site almost every day working on different aspects of the property, which no idea why they felt like they had to be there every single day. That's besides the point, but you know, all I did was ask them basic questions. And, you know, at the end of the day, like they wanted to sell me the property. And so I think the more you can get face to face with a seller, the more human you can make it and the less transactional that you can make it, you will find sellers that actually want to sell you their property. They've built a relationship with you and they want you to be the person that owns the property. If it's only you putting an offer on paper, and I get it. Sometimes you don't get that FaceTime with a seller. And so you are having to put offers just on paper. But when you put it just on paper and you don't know what the seller wants, it becomes very transactional. And I've done it, right? I put an offer on paper because I don't have access to the seller. I don't really know what they want. And I'm putting it based on what I want. And it's a quick rejection or no counter. The clearer you can get on what a seller really wants and needs or what's important to them, you can make an offer that is close, or at least give them some aspect of what's important to them and still make the deal work for you. That's where the real win-win is. And it doesn't always have to be on a seller financing deal, but I think that's just an important piece. Like there's always a transactional piece of real estate, but I think the relationship and finding out what a seller wants is a more important piece than the transaction itself. If you can agree on terms, the transactional piece of real estate is easy. That's the easy part of it.
That's a good point. It's funny because like in today's technology world, like people really rely on all things technology, CRMs, emails, text message, shoot the LOI, forget about it. Like, and I get it. We all use technology, but like, what happens is a personal connection becomes a rare attribute or rare practice. And so when you do make a personal connection, it can be really, really powerful, especially for people that like have owned these properties for a long time. They want to take care of their tenants. They want to know, they want to know and trust the person who's taking the property or transitioning it over. A lot of times they have personal relationships with the tenants or the managers. And like being human is rare in today's world. And so I think when you're just genuine and you're human, then I wouldn't even call it a negotiation. I'd say it's more of a collaboration, you know, in the end, because you're befriending and it's funny. We have sellers we're still friends with because we're truly friends with them. I mean, they're good people and we collaborated on a deal and it went well it's rare to be human, but I think it's really powerful. We got to be reminded of that, especially in today's world when we can hide behind a computer or phone or, you know, so yeah, be human.
Well, you said something. You said they need to know, like, and trust you. And I've been on the other side of that where I sold 13 units a couple of years ago, four properties, 13 total units. And I sold them to a couple. I seller financed them to a couple that I knew, like, and trusted. Yeah. They gave me the price I wanted. I gave them the terms they wanted. It was a true win-win. But it did come down to, I wouldn't have given those terms to anybody. But I knew them. I liked them. I trusted them. They had a skill set. They were people of their word, you know? And so it's like, it's being on the other side of that. It was the exact same thing. I've bought properties from people that knew me or liked me or trusted me or some combination of that. And I've sold properties to people because I know I can trust them. And I think that's that's just something that can't be overlooked on either side of the transaction.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think being human is really, really important. But we are top of the hour, so I might take us out of here. So we usually ask two questions
to our guests. We won't ask those questions, but I will tell you that if we were broke, I think we'd just borrow some money from Travis. And also, I think we're better looking than Travis, both of us. So
obviously,
he's not here to contest that. So we'll just end it with that. But in all seriousness, we have a mastermind, physical mastermind coming up. And by the time this airs, we'll probably already be done with that. But we have more of them coming up. So if you guys are interested in checking out our physical masterminds or the elite mastermind, which is both digital and physical, go to our website, www.02100tribe.com. And you can kind of check out what we're doing there. Check out the elite mastermind as well as any live events coming up that we've got. I think we'll probably be doing 2 to 3 a year, which is pretty fun. We're pretty excited about that. And you can also join the tribe if you're not part of that by going to the website there. So hopefully you guys enjoyed this. We will see you guys next week.